Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, and joining me today is Tom Siegmiller.
Melissa, thanks for having me. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about Gen Z. For years and years, there's been rumors of discourse in the workplace. And today, we're going to take the opportunity to talk a little bit further about how they operate and what makes them different. Melissa, in your experience so far, how has it been working with younger colleagues, both at Vena as well as in previous roles?
It's been great. You know, I find that they're super keen. They're really smart. They're comfortable with technology, and they really do want to jump in if you give them the opportunity. I recently was working with an individual who had just started with us in a reporting role, and he, right out of the gate, was so curious about the business and understanding the bigger picture. And so while he was learning his particular role, he was also asking a lot of questions. He was making his network grow outside of the finance team, introducing himself to individuals. He started taking a leadership from the side role within the organization by creating social events for people to get together, putting together PD opportunities for the team to learn. And I really saw how he was able to be effective and was really growing really quickly out of the gate. It's so great to see. I love it when you see that.
For me, it's always been a generation that's been categorized as impatient. And I think that can be perceived to be a bad thing. When in reality, when it shows up in the workplace, it can fundamentally manifest itself in a really, really positive manner. You talked about that team member, Adam, jumping in right away. When somebody's impatient, it means they're willing to do whatever it takes to get that opportunity to learn and grow. And the hurdles that have maybe existed for previous generations don't seemingly exist for Gen Z because of their desire to jump in head first and ultimately want to solve for those sorts of challenges.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really important to make sure that we're intentional about how do we not only attract this generation of talent, but also how do we retain them. Some of the strategies that used to work before will work, but some of them may be different between what worked for Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z. And so we're really going to have to be intentional.
It is a group of folks that has a different set of desires and interests in terms of how they operate, how they show up at work, and how they interact ultimately with others. So in this episode, we're going to dig in a lot deeper on this topic, and we'll have some phenomenal insights.
And we've got the perfect guest to help us today to explore this topic. And we're going to be getting into that conversation right after the break. So stick around and we'll be back.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the intelligent platform for complete planning. Vena's award-winning platform makes financial and operational planning more efficient, unlocks performance, and increases financial intelligence across the business so finance teams and business leaders can plan for anything. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
Joining us now is Janine Moyer, National Digital Assurance Manager and A&A Innovation Leader with Deloitte Canada. Janine, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Janine, maybe you can kick off by telling us a little bit about your role at Deloitte, what it entails, what the people structure looks like, and maybe how it's different from what we might see elsewhere.
I don't know if you guys remember being at the firm, but you tend to wear many hats and do many things. But the key focus of my role right now is leading the digital assurance practice, which is non-software packaged type things for accounting. So within the financial reporting cycle, how can we digitize it? How can we make it better? What kind of technology can we leverage? If you have an algorithm, how can we audit it? And then on the innovation side, figuring out how to bring new technologies into our service offerings, both from a delivery perspective and just understanding what's happening in the market so that we're able to serve our clients with everything that's coming and how is that going to affect audit insurance.
Sounds like a really cool role. How do you land in a seat like that?
I don't know. I was reading something the other day about, are people really lucky or not? And the actual research says that, no, they're not. There's no such thing as being lucky. What they actually found is that people who are, quote, lucky take the opportunities when they see them. And people who aren't lucky maybe don't believe it was an opportunity. So I think it's a lot of putting your hand up and just believing that you can get something done and keep pushing. So we have something at Deloitte called business chemistry. And I'm a pioneer and a driver. So driving, I push to get things done. And a pioneer is someone who really likes the new stuff, doesn't like doing the same things all the time. And, you know, maybe some of it's fairly imaginative. So those things line up quite well with my skill sets. And therefore, that's why I'm in the roles that I'm in.
It's so true. They say you make your own luck, and it sounds like you have. Things certainly have changed at the firm from when I was there. It sounds like a lot more technology, a lot more innovation. So really exciting to hear. And along lines with that, how does Gen Z play into your day-to-day role?
There's very much still the apprenticeship model where we're having younger people coming in at the beginning of their careers and we are stewarding them through learning things. So everything I do has Gen Z involved.
And what kinds of skill sets would you be hiring for your team?
So it depends, but I still think you need that really traditional, strong audit background. You need control skill sets. But I think it's also more of just a desire to do something different and be at the forefront of what's happening from a technology perspective and understanding, well, this is how it's going to affect accounting. This is how it's going to affect our CFO clients. This is how it's going to affect controllers. So I do think it's a little bit of a shift in mindset, but and also probably people who are okay with change, which I think Gen Z's seen a lot of.
How about you, Melissa? How are you finding Gen Z's affecting your day-to-day?
I love hiring Gen Z talent. I find that they're super capable, really curious, often just jump in really quickly and hit the ground running. Impatient for progress too, which I like. I find that just adds an extra element. So really fun to work with and willing to embrace new technologies, which Janine, I'm sure is very relevant in the area where you're involved. So not afraid of that and also great multitaskers.
I'd say very, very open-minded in nature. You talk about new technologies, new projects, not a lot of fear of failure if you stop and think about it, really. And maybe that's a bit of a compare and contrast that we can get into later amongst different generations and how we approach challenges. And so, Janine, if you think about the generation Gen Z, what sort of traits or characteristics are you generally finding or seeing them exhibit on a day-to-day basis?
They're open to change, like I said. They've had a lot of it. Gen Z's tenure is the shortest in each job out of any other generation before them. So that thought of, you know, I'm going to work here for 40 years just simply doesn't exist. And to be fair to them, it's not like people are rewarded for staying the way they used to be with, like, you know, a gold-plated pension and all that kind of stuff. So I do think that Gen Z is there to really get what they can for themselves in order to advance their career. So it's on us to make sure that they see us as more than just a stop on the way. And Tom, you and I talked about this a little bit, but I don't think that Gen Z is really all that different than we were or the generation before. But I think they just realize that change does happen more quickly. So what can they do to arm themselves knowing that change is happening fast? And that's going to be a lot of learning, you know, like you were saying, pushing for that next role. Again, I don't know if we were all that different. It's just a while ago. So maybe it seems like it.
It's funny that you point that out. I'm part of the millennial generation at the like older part of the generation. But I remember as I came into the workforce, all of the conversation was around millennials and how they're different and how are you going to compensate for the mindset of a millennial? It's almost comical that we're sitting here today and having this same conversation about a new generation of folks coming through and thinking, gee, this is different or unique than any generation before.
So true, Tom. It is a conversation that seems like we have it almost on a loop, repeating it. Maybe Janine, in the vein of that, how would you compare or contrast, say, millennials with Gen Z in your experience?
I think they work great together. I too, Tom, am one of those barely millennials. I think we've been called geriatric millennials at times. It's pretty great. So really barely on the cusp there between Gen X, I guess, and a millennial. I think we work great together because I find that Gen Z, they want to know what's happening. They want to know what's going on. They maybe don't have the same belief about a pyramid structure where you can't talk to the person above you. And I would say that also likely applies to millennials, maybe not to the same extreme. So I think that millennials and Gen Z work awesome together. There's not as big of a divide in experiences growing up. We're in the same economy with a bunch of the same challenges. So I think we have more of an appreciation when people are saying, hey, I need some more money, or these are some skills that I need because we, you know, we're experiencing it as well. So I think it's great to have millennials working together with Gen Z, and millennials get to kind of be a bridge, I think, at times. But Gen Z's often, they have a lot of fire. They're smart. They know more than we ever did about technology. So great. I think they're wonderful people to have.
I also find that they really do advocate for a balance and focus on health and well-being, which I also think benefits all generations. So I think that's something really great that they bring into the workforce as well.
Definitely agree with you.
Janine, when we chatted before the show, you told a story about members on your team feeling very, very comfortable engaging with the CEO on social media as an example. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and how their communication style might be different from other generations?
Previously, Yammer, I think it's called Viva Engage or something like that. But you would see younger team members having no problem just asking our CEO a question when he would do his AV live calls, or even if he posts something, you'll see them having no problem just writing him a message. I don't think, I wouldn't have done that earlier in my career. I've been too scared to, but they were taking the opportunity that he was saying, hey, I want your questions. And they were like, yeah, I'm going to ask a question then. So I think they're not as afraid. And, you know, it was through a keyboard, it was online. So I think that's a place of comfort, certainly for the younger generation. A lot more of their lives are online. My entire team, my Toronto team anyway, hired during the pandemic. I'd never met any of them in person until in 2021, you know? So we got to know each other simply online, chats, that sort of thing. So you had to be comfortable with that, and great team, high-performing team, but it's a very different way of working with people versus just being solely in person. So they are comfortable with it. I figured out my way to be comfortable with it. And I think, again, it's just pivoting and shifting your style a bit to meet the needs of your team. But that's okay. They can be phenomenal if you just meet them in a way that they're comfortable.
Melissa, would you have been comfortable in a public forum reaching out to the CEO and posing a question as you were coming up through the ranks?
No way. Not at all. But I think, as Janine mentioned, that's definitely a difference. I also think that online, you are seeing now where we do a lot more of our town halls or meetings online, and that instant messaging and the ability to just communicate that way, I definitely think has opened up the willingness of folks to ask those questions. And it's interesting to watch because it puts you on the spot in the moment a lot more quickly to handle things. But I think that's great. It opens up communication. It opens up transparency in the org.
It's interesting because it almost gives us all the right to communicate differently. And so when you talked about some of the benefits of the work-life balance previously and them really establishing those boundaries, and we can all get some good out of that, it's also an opportunity for us to learn how to communicate differently. It almost gives older generations the right to communicate in a manner or with an approach that they wouldn't have felt comfortable with previously.
Absolutely.
Janine, what do you think ultimately motivates Gen Z at this point? Is there anything that's different than any other generation previously?
No, I don't actually think so. And I think that's us assuming that something's different, but it's not really. I think, again, our economy is not in a good spot. We have huge inflation, all those sorts of things. So I do think money is very important right now, but I don't think you can actually blame anyone. And you certainly can't blame Gen Z for that. They need to have money to survive. We were talking a little bit before we started, people moving to Calgary because they can't afford anything. That's very real. We're literally talking about people, you know, we have massive use of food banks. We have all these kinds of things. This is not a crazy thing to say that people are worried about money right now. They're saying, I need to survive. So maybe instead of having your people have to move to another city, can you offer some telework options, those kinds of things that mean they don't have to spend as much money on transiting, you know what I mean? Gas, all that sort of stuff. But aside from that pretty big issue that's really an issue across the country, no, I don't actually think that they do want anything different. They want what we all want. You want meaningful work. You want to feel like what you're doing has value, like it actually helps someone, like it has future value to your career. So I don't actually think that they want things that are hugely different. I think they probably just have different communication styles than we did at the time as we were growing up in the ranks, but I don't actually think it's really different personally.
Maybe we can elaborate a little bit on the impatience from earlier in the conversation, Melissa. How do we counteract that in the workplace? How do we design a workplace that's ultimately engaging and motivating for Gen Z?
Yeah, I think, you know, as Janine said, we all at the core want recognition. We want to be doing meaningful work. I do think we find that there's more pressure put on employers now to be recognizing that more rapidly, looking for promotions, title changes in a far more advanced fashion than before. I think that what that means is for employers, you need to put in place the ability to meet that, be it you have, maybe you insert other layers within to show that there is progression happening in a way that I think we weren't as thoughtful about that in the past, because you had a bit longer before people might be expecting that next promotion or place where they're going to be recognized. I think one of the other things too is helping and instilling an environment where it's not just promotion title. This is me recognizing you or showing that I value you, but it's also when you give exciting projects to work on and that you help make sure that it's understood that we're investing in their careers and the longevity of those careers through the experiences that they're getting.
Janine, when we talked before the show, we talked a little bit about the disproportionate focus on retention at this point of Gen Z and new folks moving up through the accounting profession. How do you go about structuring team members' roles so that it is interesting, it is engaging, and they do ultimately want to stick around and get all of that growth that you can ultimately offer them?
I'll talk about a little bit at the firm and then, you know, in my working in industry life, which is about half my career as well. I mean, at the firm, we have defined rotation programs that people can apply for. Again, it's not going to be everybody who gets it, but not everybody does want it. So rotation programs within audit and assurance. So the assurance side of the house, we'd more do non-attest work and getting people ready for audit, that sort of thing. So taking maybe what you learned in audit, depending if you started in audit or assurance, and rotating through, there's that opportunity for people. We also have the opportunity to rotate within the firm to other groups. So you're talking about other service lines doing totally different things. If people are really looking for the opportunity, you can potentially put them on an engagement, just one engagement, for example, in another team if everything lines up. But I think the other big part of it is having a really structured coaching relationship and feedback on every engagement. So that is an expectation that you ask for feedback on each engagement you're on, and then you talk about it with your coach. So that way you make sure that you're actually developing. But again, we put it in their hands. You have to ask for it. We do expect you to do it, but the only person you're not benefiting is yourself if you don't take advantage. So I think that strong mentorship and coaching culture is extremely important. Then in industry life, again, it's not like you have the opportunity to be like, okay, you're working on this client for these couple months and this client for actually only 2 weeks and, you know, getting all these opportunities to try different things. But it's very much the same approach in my mind. So I would always rotate people through positions. So a little bit different in industry, obviously, if things you need to get done every month end, you can't let any of them drop, but there's tons of shadowing that needs to happen. You can have your transition time, say 3 months, where each person's training up on the other role that they're rotating to. I'd usually do it around a year and a half in a role. And that seemed to work for people on my team at the time. And then making sure, yeah, they have involvement in projects. We're doing some big, huge A&D work. Well, you're going to be involved in that. Or we're implementing this system. Okay, well, you're going to be involved in that. So leaders lead and allow people to go do things and make them successful. And bosses tell you what to do, and they're just your boss because they're there. So I find the leader approach works a lot better for Gen Z as well.
That sort of rotational program has been something that's always worked really, really well in my career. As I think about FP&A, we have to partner with every different facet of the organization. And in my career, I was lucky enough early on to typically get rotated about every 12 to 18 months. And so whether it was supporting sales or marketing, professional services, R&D, that rotation provided immense growth, role to role to role. And so not every step was a new step up the org chart, if you will, or a new title, but certainly an extraordinary opportunity to build out your skill set and learn and grow.
Yeah. And I think those rotations too, Tom, you know, we put those in place for FP&A for our team. It allows them to take what they've learned in the prior role and bring it into the next one, which in our case for business partnership makes them a better, stronger business partner. And so it really is, it's a win-win both for the employee and the company when we do things like that. I really love, Janine, you've talked about a bunch of different innovative approaches to how you have structured things to retain talent. What about any other things like flexibility, work-life balance, and anything you've done there?
So I think some of the things that we do at Deloitte more widely is certainly flex days. We call them Deloitte days. They're extra days that you get various times. So more time in the summer, often more time around a long weekend. We have slow down periods. For example, one right before September long where we're saying, hey, if you didn't take your vacation, you need to take it now. We have slow down periods around Christmas. And again, so I think it's just recognizing that those are the times when people are wanting to do things, maybe spend time with family and trying to give the supportive environment to allow people to do it. We definitely don't want people to have carryover vacation. So we'll be on them saying, hey, you need to take this. You've got more than the allowed carryover days. Like, we need to figure out how to make this work. So definitely it's not to be proud of to not take all of your vacation, which potentially, you know, could be a pride point elsewhere. That's certainly not for us. And allowing people to work in a hybrid environment. Obviously, being in the office for an apprenticeship type model is important. If you remember your days back in audit, you know, you just need to be able to ask a question without having to schedule a meeting. Certainly that's important. But being really cognizant of how and where we work. So maybe it's totally fine that you're working at home those few days a week while you're doing other things, and then you're having some meetings in the office, that sort of thing. So I think just really that level of flexibility, again, treating people like professionals. If you're able to get your work done from where it is, but still be a good part of your team and contribute needed in person or when you're at the client, I personally think it's just treating people like adults as well, right? Like, I'm not going to be, you know, this person who's watching over you and telling you to be here and there. As long as you're doing everything you can and delivering to the best of your ability. So I think there's a lot of that. We have a lot of trust in our people, and there's no forcing people back for, oh, you have to be in the office 4 days a week. There's nothing like that that's going on. And I think that, you know, really helps with that perception and of saying, hey, yeah, I can do what I need, what's flexible for me. Or I have this class that I go to. So, hey, I know we're really busy, but I need to go to it. It's at 3:30 or 4. I'm going to come back on a little bit later. I mean, for myself, you guys know I just had a kid. We did not know when I was coming back that because she was just below 12 months, she was only allowed 9 to 3. That is not a workable work day for anyone. So, you know, everyone was cool with it. They're like, you know what? It's only 6 weeks. So you do what you need to do. You pick her up at 3 and you do whatever you need to do to get your work done at other hours. And it was fine. Right. So no, I'm not Gen Z, but I was given that same level of flexibility to make sure that my transition back to work was, you know, easy. And it was. And it would have been extremely stressful to work somewhere that wasn't okay. Or what did I have to do? I don't even know what I would have done if it wasn't okay, right? So definitely a good degree of flexibility.
Really no choices there. And I think you're right. You know, treating people like adults is so key, so important. That flexibility. And I love what you said about being intentional about what work you do, when and how. Like you said, there's sometimes in terms of when you're learning a job, needing mentorship, maybe that's better done in person, but there's also a lot of benefit to being able to work in alternate ways to put your head down and just get your work done. What about on the social side? I remember when I was working at the firm, and sometimes we would work really, really long days, really long hours, especially if we had a tight deadline. And I think part of what would fuel us in those environments was being together with our team and feeding off of one another's energy. And I do think there is that need to fill a social need. What has been your experience there with Gen Z, and what things do you do at the firm to cover that?
There's definitely still in-person events for sure. And during COVID, when you really couldn't be in person, we tried several different online platforms to, you know, do like a virtual scavenger hunt, or, you know, we tried to recreate as best we could. And I know no one got that perfect or right, but the point is we tried the best we could, and we did find ways for people to engage during COVID. Now we're definitely back more to the in-person side, even small things like, hey, you know, coffee and donuts this day, letting people know so that way they can schedule their time, because not everyone's on the same engagement. Not everyone has the same days they need to be in the office. But saying, hey, this day is going to be pizza day, or this day is going to be this day, so that people can, you know, plan their time to be in. And some of the feedback from our more junior staff was too, hey, well, if I don't know when anyone's going to be in the office, why would I go? So we actually have a new, I guess maybe app is the right thing to call it, that says, you say what days you're going to be in because you book your seat, and then people can see when you're there. So if someone's really looking to be able to run into you, they can check if you're going to be there, right? So yeah, you got to book your seat because there's not enough seats for everyone. I think lots of us are kind of used to more the hoteling type experience now, but it also allows people to say, hey, these people are in on my team today, or a bunch of people are going to be in on Tuesday. I'm going to go in on Tuesday as well. So it, again, different ways of knowing that you can connect, I think are really important.
That idea of being thoughtful, intentional really, really resonates. I know for me, I very much enjoy working remote, being able to focus, be heads down, not be distracted on a day-to-day basis. But every time I come to the office, every time we get together with our team, I find myself energized and ready to go again. It's you're ready to tackle that next challenge or tackle the world together. It certainly does infuse a feeling of camaraderie. And so planning those days as your team very intentionally, not thinking that these social collisions will occur if you don't plan them, probably a little bit short-sighted, and a great takeaway.
So this is another thing that would have changed during COVID, but also it's for Gen Z. You're going to have to be able to instant message. Like, that's just going to be part of the way that you need to talk to your team. So, you know, we used to have Skype. Now we're just solely on Teams, but that's another way that you have to be able to connect. I put in some office hours, again, during COVID and having a team across Canada so that people can just drop in. So that's my actual time. I was available. It's in everyone's calendar, you know, office hours. And if we didn't get to talk about whatever we wanted to talk about elsewhere, then that was another time. Sometimes it's about work. Sometimes it wasn't. But again, those are thoughtful things that you can do. And you could do that in person. You could do that virtually. I also personally have a once a week meeting with the wider team just to make sure we're all talking. Hopefully it's somewhat work related. But again, if it's not, I'm not fussed about it. The idea is so that everyone knows that they have a home and a place to be a part of. And, you know, kind of gets everyone set up for the week because it's always Monday. I chose that day intentionally.
So as a fellow geriatric millennial, if you think about that instant messaging, it's probably a change in speed or course in terms of how we communicated differently. I know for me, the desire for an instant response created a little bit of culture shock as I started working with Gen Z in the first place. How have you sort of adapted or changed as time went on to that approach?
I just tell them the honest truth. They know that I'm quite often on calls. I either have clients or I'm, you know, talking to someone else on the team across the country. So I just say, message me and I will get to it as soon as I can. So I don't let people depend on whether I'm red on a call, yellow or green. I just say, send me the note and I will get to it. Or, you know, send me an email as well if you need to. And, you know, usually I respond quickly enough. It's no different than someone dropping by your office and they see you're on the phone and then you notice they were there and you need to get back to them. So I instead try not to think of it as invasive versus it's just the way someone was telling me, hey, I need to chat with you. And everyone else is in the same boat as me, right? They're going to be on a call next when I'm trying to reach out to them. So sometimes you're just having a chat on the side and that's actually the best way to deal with it so that you don't have to schedule a whole meeting or your meeting ends early and you say, hey, like my meeting ended early. Do you have 5 minutes to chat now? So that is kind of your way of recreating that in-person, someone just popping by your office. You just have to be flexible. We're not going to change it. This is the way the world is. So I instead try not to be too stressed about what it is and just be like, yeah, this is how we're going to talk and just let it be. And I think I told you before, I definitely grew up differently when it comes to computers and tech. So it doesn't bother me at all. I'm fine. But I can completely understand if the average person didn't grow up that way, which is more like a Gen Z, it might be a little uncomfortable. But again, it's not going away. So I would just say, let it go. I don't have any other advice besides let it go and know that this is the way that people feel comfortable communicating. And we'll probably be doing it or some different form of it too. So let's not get too stressed about this one. There'll be another one at some point.
I really like how you talked about, you know, communicating how you're going to work and setting the expectations on the other side, because I do think that's critical. I was at a session last week where they were talking about the science behind productivity. And one of the things they talked about was the context switching. We potentially could lose up to 2 hours a day if we're constantly context switching. And that really hit me that, You know, we do have an instant access type of culture now in general. And yet you do need to be somewhat intentional with how you're working. And, you know, they were suggesting setting aside those times to respond to the Slacks or the emails, doing it regularly enough in the day that you're meeting expectations. But I do think, you know, helping people understand the why and how you're planning to work is really an important thing to do.
And you are right about that. 100%. All the science says that we need time to focus. Like you're saying, Tom, you like to put your head down. You like to not always be in the office to do that. You can manage that if you're virtual by putting it on Do Not Disturb. And you know what? You can put a status, you know, I'm doing X, you, whatever, I'll be available again at Y. Great. Everyone sees that. So I do think, again, there's ways that we can communicate with people, and it's still totally reasonable. You're still getting your job done. And why aren't we having expectation meetings? I have expectation meetings. We have project kickoffs. We have all kinds of meetings like that. So why wouldn't we have meetings like that? When I was in industry, I had a meeting a month, which with each of my supervisors or managers to be like, okay, hey, how are things going? And, you know, the expectation is also that they come prepared, and then we talk about anything that needs to change. You just need to have the conversation again, because otherwise people just assume, right? Everyone's assuming, I'm assuming one thing, you're assuming another. So we may as well talk about it, that there's just no room or limited room for miscommunication. How about that?
We're on this really amazing theme of transparency right now. And so, Melissa, I'm going to ask you, has Gen Z demanded a degree of transparency that previous generations didn't? We talk a little bit about patient, impatient, doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to be a good or a bad thing, more factual in nature. Have they driven more transparency in the workplace as a result of the way they operate and the way the rest of the world needs to adapt and change to thrive with them?
Absolutely. And I would say that's been a gradual change. I wouldn't say it's just Gen Z. I think as time has gone on, probably, you know, millennials were demanding a bit more of that. And I think it just continues to go on. And so, which I think is also good, because then it's forcing companies to share insights, help connect the dots with the purpose of what it is you're doing, the why behind what it is that you're doing. And so I do think it helps drive better business outcomes, but no question, increasing demands on transparency and also increasing demands on them wanting to understand where their employers stand on certain issues. When new topics come up, there's a current event, they're looking for their leaders to help understand, okay, what's the company's position on that? And that's also something that was not in existence, you know, in prior generations.
It almost forces us all to be a lot more thoughtful in our approach to things. When you know you have to answer to the masses, you adapt accordingly, you get ready, you're more thoughtful behind closed doors, you find there's a lot more syncing going on amongst management teams, really some positives that can ultimately come out of it.
Absolutely.
Janine, how can companies provide skill development? So if team members are Gen Z, they're very, very early on, I find they often have a lot of the technical skills that it takes for them to navigate their careers well, something that they can often teach us and impart upon us. Where are there gaps that you typically see in their skill sets that you can help them to work on and ultimately develop into being really, really effective professionals?
I definitely don't think this is just a Gen Z thing. I think this is anyone who is earlier on in their career, and it's often going to be more on the soft skill side. And throughout history, the mistake has been repeated of promoting people who are technically competent but are terrible at people management, right? And everyone leaves because no one likes to work for a bad people manager. So I know we were talking before we got kicked off, like, who would have thought that you'd have to have this as a skill set when you were doing your CA? I didn't either. So I think it's, you know, seeing opportunities for them to do something that might be normally in the past reserved for someone who's more senior, or I know this is more a firm unique opportunity, but often we speak at events, we maybe provide education to CPA, whoever, or something like that. I'll have them involved either in delivery or actually helping me prepare the materials, maybe help me come up with what it should be. And then again, that gives them an idea of what's important, even if they don't get to do the actual speaking themselves. I try and get people to do the speaking. I know not everyone wants to do it, but I will try to. Or I'll be like, okay, fine, I'm going to do it, but then I want you there and I want you to do this portion. So, you know, there's a lot more I think, expected of us as CPAs than there would have been in the past. And if you're going to be a business partner, you are not just in the numbers and you have to be able to communicate information. It's not just data. No one, you know, I remember an industry and let's say one of the field managers would just be like, what does this even mean, right? Like you have to actually communicate it versus being like, here's your P&L. So I do think skill sets of communicating information versus just data are extremely important for CPAs. And again, it's expected of us. And all of us basically work for tech companies, whether we believe we do or not now. And if our companies aren't far more techie and have new things available to us, they will cease to exist. That is also what the data tells us. So I just think it's a shift in skill set overall that's required. And we're not going to do our companies or ourselves any favors if we don't give our youngest team the ability to try and, you know, present and engage in that new reality.
Melissa and I were chatting this morning and we were commenting that never in a million years did we think we'd be hosting a podcast together. And so that doesn't ring more true for us than ever before.
Absolutely. And I think, Janine, you really are right about the skills. You know, we come through thinking the technical skills you're as an accountant that you need, but some of those soft skills are so critical if you're going to be able to effectively communicate. I think about things like influence skills. How do you influence? Project management skills. Everybody at some point is going to have to lead a team of people at working at something, even if they're not the direct leader. And those skill sets really can make a difference. And I think it's important we invest in those skills to help in terms of growing careers for young people.
I was actually chatting with a team member the other day and huge development opportunity. They were really concerned about progression into a people management role. And we talked a little bit about leadership through authority versus leadership through influence. And from my perspective, that ability to be able to influence a person without authority is by far the superior skill set. And we talked about how do we build that skill set versus being ultimately fixated on, I want to lead people. And, you know, I jokingly said anybody can, you know, any idiot can go tell somebody to go do something else because they happen to be their leader in the organization. If you can get people to do things because you've motivated them, you've gotten them excitement by the premise of a theme or a path that you're going in, that's true leadership. Like that's the skill set that we're all looking to master as people.
And people often think that people leadership's the only way to move up. So what other paths are there? So it's also on us to explain and show those other paths. And we have a unique opportunity, I guess, in finance. If you think about it, everybody's junk just ends up in our backyard in finance because we didn't create any of the transactions ourselves besides maybe initiating a payable, right? Or a receivable. Otherwise, it's all related to information processes and things that happened 100% out of finance. So you're going to have a junk close, a junk everything, unless you can influence and work with the rest of the company to help try and fix the process that's resulting in the problem. So there really are a lot of opportunities for finance professionals to work on those skill sets. And, you know, until the rest of the company understands what finance does or why does it take so long to do this, they don't have a lot of appreciation. So that influencing skill set, super important.
I like that. Influencing through the junk. I'm going to remember that.
I know not everyone would like to say it that way, but it's true. We end up with the results of what everybody else's process was in the rest of the company in finance.
So Janine, so much great advice you've given us today. If you had to pick just two items that you'd want the audience to remember today, what would they be?
Probably I would say something around this, you know, wanting to people manage piece. So the best advice I ever got given on that was first write down the 10 best qualities of the best leader you ever had and give examples. Write those all down. And then write down the 10 worst of the worst boss you've ever had and examples. And then think about it for a day. Sit on those, make sure that's true. And then rate yourself the next day. And be honest, because you have to give examples of how you are doing that or not. And that'll really change how you show up. Because you'll realize, maybe I wasn't doing that as much as I thought I was. Or I don't have as good of an example of that. So maybe I'm not doing that. That's one way you can become a much better leader, is definitely that self-reflection. And the only other thing I'd say is just go for it. Honestly, that's it. Just go for it. What do you got to lose?
Great advice. So Janine, thank you so much for joining us for this discussion. Now, whenever we have guests on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask them. Are you ready?
Yep.
What is the best piece of leadership or business advice that you've received in your career?
That best advice is just really follow your heart. And if you don't like what you're doing, you really have to ask yourself why. And you can only change yourself or change the situation. So decide which one of those it's going to be and make some moves accordingly.
And what is something that you do in your personal life that helps you to show up as your best self in your professional life?
Definitely just working out, keeping myself active. I walk a lot every day. And sometimes I even tell people, hey, this is going to be a walking meeting. I know my team knows, but I have a long-term back injury. So I'm like, this meeting is going to be a walking meeting. I can't look at anything on screen. So I will tell people when that needs to be the case. And it's just, you know, managing my physical reality with needing to work and what everyone else needs and just, you know, both of us accepting that and getting through the day. So again, accepting your reality, but making sure that you're taking care of yourself physically is really the only way to show up well at work, in my opinion.
Such valuable advice. Thank you so much, Janine, for sharing that with us today. And thanks to my co-host, Tom, for joining me on today's episode. If you'd like more information about today's show, please see the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcast because you don't want to miss an episode. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.